Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And you don't have too much time, guys. It's just till December 21st at the Ojai Art Center Theater on Montgomery Street in Ojai. A wonderful show, Annie. And this is a perfect way to ring in the holidays, by the way. And I have one of my favorite people here that talked to me before, Gay Jones. And Gay has got such an incredible background. I'm only going to touch on a little of it because we want to talk a little bit about the show, Annie. And I've got a cast here, too. Wonderful folks. I've got Clay Creasy here. I've got Susan Webb. I've got Lenny Claff. I have Bill Spellman. And I have James Alderite. I've got all these cast members here together also to talk about their roles in the show. But let me talk to you about Gay. So she's been involved with what I think is a really super worthy thing, because that I don't think, Gay, I would have gotten through high school if there wasn't someone like you in my high school in Little Corn Town, Deerfield, Illinois. We had we had a woman named Coach K, and Coach K was the high school's drama teacher. And Coach K, not only she was so formative, but she would take a number of students that she thought were really talented and creative under her wing. And she'd have annual excursions with parents if they wanted to come to London to see a really good show. She'd take a bunch to Greece to see the Theater of Dionysus. I mean, it was incredible what she did for us. And do you know, Gay, we called ourselves the M Hallers because it was the music hall where Coach K was. She had her booth, and that's where we did our thing with her. We now have 14 of us M Hallers. We're all 60 years old, and the M Hallers still get together for everybody's birthday. I mean, it's on Zoom, but we get together and we talk about the shows that Miss K directed with us. And we were kids. We were 13, 16 years old. And when Miss K passed away, all of us got together. Some of us flew in for her funeral.
Yeah,
this was, you know, it was just, she was so formative. So when I, you know, first a couple years ago read that, you know, you were directing at the Ojai Art Center Theater, I looked into your background. I find out this. Okay, everybody sit down. This is just really cool. Gay, past president of the Educational Theater Directors Governing Board, past president of super many, many, many advocacy positions for high school and community college theater, Drama Teachers Academy curriculum coordinator and contributor for many different schools and many different, she's written a couple of great books on leadership in the theater. She's a theater teacher, boot camp co-founder. And then she had her own couple of wonderful long stays at various high schools throughout the country. And especially she wrote a textbook that's used for, you know, used by drama teachers for high school drama, Raising the Curtain. And there's also, I took a look at Perfection Learning, where you've contributed a great deal, Gay, over the years. There's a number of books available. And if you're listening and you're an educator in the theater, you know, you should really take a look at the kind of material that Gay's done in her life and the kind of, now, before we get started, Gay, this is the question on the top of my mind, and I have to ask you this. So Richard and I have been doing the show for almost 20 years together, and we both of us share a real interest in creativity and what defines creativity. And, you know, on my show and also Richard's show, We talk a lot about what it is, that ineffable thing that makes creativity. You know, is it a little bit sympathy, empathy, mind space? I don't know. But we talk about it with the various guests we've had. And one of the guests said, I had that, you know, I'm an appraiser and I look at a lot of paintings. We had an educator at City College, 40 years he taught painting. And we asked him, Richard and I asked him, so, you know, you've been teaching 40 years. Every year you've got a bevy of students. How do you recognize talent? And his response was, of course, he's a painter. His subject was oil painting. And he taught oil painting classes. And if anybody's ever worked in oil paints, you know that oil paints have a tendency to run together. And so he said, I recognize talent. There's a metaphor here, Gay. I recognize talent right before I see the brown potato in the sky. What he meant by that was before the oil paints start to mush together. In other words, I recognize talent in a young person when they know when to stop. Mm-hmm. And that was such an important thing to hear. Richard and I never forgot that comment, because knowing when to finish something. And by the way, I went online to see if I could get tickets for Annie, and I realized there's really only one weekend left, because the closing matinee is already sold out. So this is, you know, if you got to jump on these tickets while you can. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Ojai Art Center Theater. It is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, in California. It was founded in 1939. It's the longest continuously operating multidisciplinary center serving the arts in California. The Ojai Arts Center Theater branch usually and annually presents a year-long season of a whole range of theatrical productions. And what's so interesting to me is my friend Lisa Engel, she keeps me in touch with what's going on at the theater. That is such a talent. There's so many talented people involved with the theater in Ojai. It blows my mind. I mean, people that come from, you know, incredible backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Incredible. I mean, Tony Awards, Emmy Award winners, and, you know, past directors that have incredible credits, people that work for years as screenwriters, and I mean, wonderful, wonderful bunch of people. And I want to talk a little bit about Annie just before we get started. It's one of Broadway's most beloved stories. And by the way, I got to say to the gang that's here, it's a bunch of thespians in front of me. I just finished watching a marvelous film about the creation of a musical called Blue Moon. Mm-hmm. And it is fantastic. It's the set. Okay, so it's a Linkletter film that stars Ethan Hawke as Ethan Hawke plays the you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein before it was Rodgers and Hammerstein. Who is the guy that preceded him?
Rodgers and Hart.
Yeah, Hart.
That's right. So Rodgers and Hart. And so the main character is Lorenz Hart. And it's set in 1943, where Oklahoma is now premiering. And it's the first show that Hart has not been involved with Rodgers. And it's the change, the bellwether change that Oklahoma was in the wartime for theater in the United States. And I just have to say, everybody's got to watch that when they can. It'll really hit home with the Annie troupe here. So Annie is set, coincidentally, in the Great Depression. And the young heroine, Annie, she escapes her horrible life in a New York City orphanage. And she finds a new home with billionaire Oliver Warbucks. And you know, she outsmarts her warden. She reminds us all throughout numbers of songs that brighter days lie ahead. And, you know, you've got tomorrow and it's a hard knock life. And, you know, these sorts of things that you'll absolutely recognize the minute you hear them on stage at Ojai Arts Center Theater. What's happening at Ojai Art Center Theater? You should all know that there's auditions for Symmetry Club coming up. And if you go on and plug your name in audition alerts and you're a aspiring actor, you can kind of see what's going on. And I don't know much about the Cemetery Club. I was trying to read up on that, but maybe we'll talk about that. Become a member. And also, you know, now that we're getting to the end of the year is a perfect time to either volunteer or support the arts by actually donating a few bucks to the Ojai Art Center Theater. And boy, they do all kinds of things. I was just looking on the Move and Shake with the dance branch. So, you know, the Art Center Theater is composed of many different creative little pockets and venues. And so there's something for everybody, you know, whether you want to act or dance or paint, or actually I've seen wonderful art shows there as well. So let me turn this over to Gay. I wanted to introduce some of the cast that's here with us, and some are familiar faces. By the way, Gay, that, you know, you've worked with before, I know, because we've had a couple of interviews, you and I. Introduce the folks that are here for me.
Okay. We have 16 orphans who are not with us today, and about 26 adults who only few are with us today. I'm very fortunate to pull these people together and say, how would you like to be on a radio show? And they were very kind to say, of course. So we have constructed a scene. But you're going to meet James Alderetti, who is, he calls himself an educator during the day and an actor at night. Clay Creasy, Clay, CFO, and he is Daddy Warbucks. Dr. Bill Spellman, who is a former dentist, and he plays FDR. You'll hear him do that today. Lenny Claif, who is still practicing law. Correct, Lenny?
Yes, and, indeed.
And he plays Harold Ickes. And Susan Webb, who is the one female cabinet member of FDR, and that's Frances Perkins. And I think we got everybody. I get to play the role of Annie today because she couldn't get out of school, but that's fine. And I think that's it. So anyway, we have two girls who have traded off as Annie. And you're talking about the future of theater education, and you're right, Elizabeth. It takes one person to recognize creativity and either foster it or squash it. And we're not in the business of squashing. I've had former students who have gone on to great success, a former opera star. I have a student who just retired from being a Superior Court judge. I had a kid who had a mistake in a play and made it funny, what it should not have been in 1984. But he went on, and now he has the longest running murder mystery improv show in Vegas. So whatever you do in theater, mistakes will be made because it's live theater. And Clay will attest to that, and I think others will attest to that as well. Mistakes are made, but we just roll with the punches. Oh, well, you know, Elizabeth, that we are there to make live theater and make it real for you. I think that's it for the cast. Anything?
Well, you know, I want to mention, you know, Gay, I know what you're talking about. So I was in, I always got cast as in high school. I was taller than most people. I was a tall kid, and I got cast a lot in the older woman roles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so Coach K cast me in The Boyfriend, and I was one of the madames in The Boyfriend. And I remember, she kept on saying, okay, Elizabeth, you know, act like you, or perform like you're going to be performing as if this was the a performance, not just a rehearsal. And I was very shy and very tall and very gawky, and I just didn't want to come out of my shell. And then I realized on opening night, I got to come out of this shell, and I surprised the heck out of everybody, but I practically screwed up the whole production because all of a sudden I was giving it 100%, whereas I was only given 20% before. And she was like, whoa, what? She didn't know what to do, but she said, okay, let her go with it, and let's see if you guys can keep up. And as a matter of fact, that was a big mistake, but all the rest of the cast members did keep up, and I was really surprised with what I could pull out of myself. But yeah, I get it. I know what you're talking about. Well, what do you have for us, Gay? You and I were kind of communicating in the email that we'd like to bring something.
We have
tell me about that.
Scene. It is the cabinet scene in which Bill plays FDR, and I'll read in a couple of parts, but Harold Ickes is played by Lenny, and Clay Creasy is playing Warbucks, of course, and Susan is playing Francis Perkins, and James is playing Morgenthau. Is that right? No, James, you're playing who?
Cordell Hull.
Cordell Hull. Yeah, of course. Okay.
The kind of- so before we get started, Gay, tell us a little bit about these characters. Who's Cornell? I know FDR. Who's Cornell Hull?
Oh, Cordell Hull. James, you want to tell him a little about it? He's in Secretary of
State.
State.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Francis Perkins is the Secretary of
Labor. Here's the book about it.
There it is, right there. And look, the nice thing, look at that hat. Susan, you want to tell her about the hat there that you got?
Yes, I was looking for an authentic 1930s hat, and I found a hat on eBay, and I contacted the seller. She kindly sent me this gorgeous black hat with black veil and rhinestone pin, and she said it came from her dear Aunt Frances, and I'm playing Frances Perkins. So I thought that was a little Celestine prophecy moment, a wonderful serendipitous moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just have a question for you, Susan. I mean, how do you move from Vermont to Ojai?
By airplane. I started acting in Vermont. I went to college in Boston, and then I was looking for someplace sunny and warm to transfer my job. I was with the Marriott Corporation at that point, mm-hmm. and I found the Marriott in Santa Barbara, flew out, interviewed, received an offer the same day, stayed, and blossomed from there.
Where did you go to school in Boston?
Boston University.
BU. Yeah.
Okay. I was at Tufts.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. Yeah.
That's right around the corner from you. Okay, mm-hmm. So I wasn't aware we had a female Secretary of Labor.
You do.
Very first one, and she was instrumental in pushing Social Security into creation.
She was more than instrumental. She was the driving force. And she was the Secretary of Labor for all 14 years while FDR was in office. By far the longest running cabinet member and the first woman. I have a book about her, which I held up a few minutes ago. It's definitely, Susan, you should read this at some point in time. It's pretty, it's a page turner, no doubt about it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, so now, before we get started, I want to ask about FDR. You know, always listening to FDR's very antique vintage voice tapes of him speaking. And he has that East Coast, almost British, but not quite accent. Do we do that in the show, Gay?
We'll talk to FDR Bill. Bill, what are you using with your accent there?
I'm trying to get as close as I remember FDR. I'm trying to get as close as I can to his speech pattern, which of course is nobody on the East Coast can pronounce the letter R. So that's the main part of the shtick.
But don't you see, it's a very interesting patois, I should say. It's not quite the English that we speak today.
That's right.
It's not as harsh.
It's a small group of people spoke that, and he grew up in upper New York, and that's the way they spoke.
And he did have a rhythm, I think, Elizabeth, you're right. He did, and Bill, he had a rhythm that was very identifiable. And he also got to have that cigarette holder in his mouth the whole time. So there he is right there.
Oh, there we go. Okay, Bill's got that going. He's got the cigarette. If you could only see what I see. I know it's radio, but he's got the cigarette holder there, which, Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let us launch.
Okay.
And set the stage for us, if you would.
Okay, we are having a cabinet meeting. FDR has called us together, and I get to read Morgenthau right now because Bruce couldn't get on, but here we go. And he just picked up a newspaper, and there are some financial reports in the newspaper which are not very friendly to FDR. So if we're ready, we're ready to go. Or Morgenthau says, did anybody see the newspaper this morning?
My friends, I say again, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Franklin, you've already been elected.
Oh, let's see. Every cloud has a silver lining. You're never fully dressed without a smile.
Good morning, Mr. President.
And Roosevelt says, well, who is this we have here?
Show them in.
And Mr. President, this is my good friend, Annie.
She wanted
to meet you that I couldn't resist bringing her along just to say hello.
Of course, the little girl who sang so beautifully on the radio last night.
Annie, this is President Roosevelt.
How do you do, President Roosevelt?
How do you do, Annie? You're as lovely as you sounded on the radio.
Thank you, President Roosevelt.
Well, shall we begin?
Annie, if you'll wait outside, I'll...
No, Oliver. Let Annie stay. Having a child on hand will keep us on our best behavior.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Annie?
Harold, I don't want to hear so much as a gosh out of you.
Franklin. A child?
Now, Oliver, since you speak for those few happy Americans who have any money left, I'd like to begin with your views on matters.
Mr. President, in the words of Calvin Coolidge, the business of this country is and for the good of you and the country and Wall Street and me, we've got to get my factories open and the workers back to work.
According to my latest figures, there are now 15 million Americans out of work and nearly 50 million with no visible means of support.
Mr. President, if I may say so, unemployment is not our worst problem. The dispatches from Germany are becoming more and more disturbing each day. There could be war.
Germany, hell, there are people starving in this country.
Harold, I know that. But in the long run, we're not...
Cordell, for people who are starving, there is no long run.
The trouble is all happening at once. The stock market has taken another nosedive.
Sit-down strikes, riots.
Floods, dust storms.
And the FBI still hasn't caught Al Capone. Well, at least we're all agreed on one thing. The situation is hopeless and getting worse.
Henry, I'd like to see those figures.
The sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be...
Quiet, little girl.
Harold. What did you say, Annie? Oh, that's all right. Go ahead, my dear. It's still a free country.
When I'm stuck with a day that's gray and lonely, I just stick up my chin and grin and say, oh, the sun'll come out tomorrow. So you gotta hang on till tomorrow, come what may. Tomorrow. Tomorrow, I love you. Tomorrow, you're always a day away.
Harold Ickes, stand up.
What?
You heard me, Harold. Stand up. Up, up, up. Now, Harold, sing.
What?
Yeah, sing like Annie. I've just decided if my administration is going to be anything, it's going to be optimistic about the future of this country. Now sing.
But Franklin, you know I can't sing.
Sing!
The sun will come out tomorrow.
Louder, Harold.
Bottom dollar that tomorrow.
Perkins!
Sun.
Just thinking about tomorrow clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow. Till there's no
the president. When I'm stuck with a day that's gray and lonely, I just stick out my tongue.
Excuse me, it's up my chin.
Up my chin. Everyone, I just grin and say, everyone, Republicans too, Oliver, sing.
Tomorrow. Hang on till tomorrow. Come what may.
Tomorrow,
I love you. Tomorrow, you're always a day away. And Annie Vincent. Bye, everybody. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Annie. Thank you.
Goodbye, Mr. President, and thank you.
Oh, thank you, Annie. You're the kind of a person a president should have around him.
Mr. President, what if we set up 1,000 new federal projects?
Dams!
Yes.
Highways!
Yes.
New post offices.
Yes, and put the unemployed to work building them.
We could create 5 million new jobs within 6 months.
And pay weekly paychecks would get all of those millions off relief and back to paying taxes.
We'll build a country so strong that nobody, including Chancellor Hitler, could ever defeat us in a war.
Mr. President, what we've got to give this country is nothing less than a new outlook.
A new vision.
A new approach.
A new concept. A new dedication.
A new horizon.
A new spirit. A new attitude.
A new deal.
Yes!
Gentlemen, I was right the first time. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And that's our scene for that one right there, Elizabeth. Hope that's okay.
Oh, that's fantastic. Right, cool. That's fantastic. So, Bill.
Hello?
Yeah, so, Bill, you're going to be 90. Is that correct?
In August, yeah, I'll be 90.
So what does...
If I make it to August, I may not be able to. A little bit rickety.
So what does this do for you, being in a performance like this at the age of almost 90? Tell me.
It's just fun. I've been doing it at the Art Center since 1994. And it's just great fun.
Mm-hmm. So you play in the production of Annie, you play a bankrupt hobo living in one of the Hoovervilles in 1933, and then you switch to be President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah.
How do you make that?
One of those situations where you're playing more than one person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually run from president from Hooverville.
Mm-hmm.
The Roosevelts are a very wealthy family. His cousin Theodore Roosevelt was president, and he decided he wanted to be president too. Why not?
How is it though that, well, anybody that's playing two roles or more, how do you get yourself into the head of both roles, Bill?
Well, two of the roles are very small. And so the only one I really need to get my head into is Roosevelt. I also play Santa Claus.
Yeah, I was going to say, he does play a cigar-smoking Santa Claus as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much everybody in this play has multiple roles.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so I have a question here for James.
Yes.
I'm not sure what you teach, James. What do you teach during the day?
I do a reading intervention program. It helps with dyslexia and things like that. And I also do lunch duty.
Okay, so you're a words person.
Yeah.
Okay, and how did you get into to performing?
I've always loved performing. I loved it when I was a kid. I always wanted to be an actor. And so when the chance came up in 2016, I was like, you know what? Let me go to the Art Center, see what they've got. And that was, and Gay happened to be my first director. And that was Adam's Family. And I played Uncle Fester.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I shaved my head for that role.
Fantastic. And so now you worked with Gay first off the bat. So Gay, has James, you know, has he matured as an actor?
Oh, James plays a variety of roles. We never quite know what to expect, what role James is playing. And he usually is one of those actors that will play multiple roles. And besides that, I give him up for technician as well. James has been invaluable on this crew as well, because he was there and he helped set things up and move Christmas trees that had challenges. We couldn't get a Christmas tree. First of all, we had to donate a Christmas tree from the Lions Club, and it was way too tall and would fall over. So then we got an artificial tree. So James has just been invaluable helping the stage managers with moving things, and also teaching the younger actors on how to be professional on stage.
Yeah. So what's that like? That was my next question is, you know, you've got, what did you say, 14 young ones?
Mm-hmm. 16, actually 16. We have one young man who is 5'2", and he plays LaGuardia, the mayor of New York, because LaGuardia was 5'2". So he gets to be picked up by James, as a matter of fact. And he's having a really good time. And then we have a dog catcher that gets to chase a real dog that has been rescued by the Humane Society across the stage and nab him, so to speak. So we're working with the Humane Society because they bring over adoptable dogs during the matinees and on the patio. So if somebody wants to go out and adopt a dog, they have them there. So.
What a good idea, because it's about orphans anyway, right? So you bring the orphan dogs to, that's a fantastic idea, Gay. Okay, so Leonard.
Yes.
So tell me about your role, and tell me, you know, how does your background fit into your role?
Only as a trial lawyer, I gave.
That's where I was going. Okay.
Many a time in front of an audience of jurors. So I always have felt comfortable on stage. Remembering my lines is a problem, but I'm always comfortable. So.
Mm-hmm. He also plays Lieutenant Ward, the cop that finds Sandy, the dog. We have a really well-trained dog, but he gets to be the lieutenant that warns Annie if he doesn't have him with a license the next time, he's going to take him to the pound. So there's a little bit of, nobody wants to boo Lieutenant Ward, but that would be the time to do it, right?
Yep. Yeah, and I can do a New York cop without any problem, you know?
Yep.
Why?
Because I'm from New York.
Oh, there. Okay. That's the answer to that one. Okay. So can you tell me, okay, this is something I was going for, knowing that you were a trial lawyer and still practice law. I was telling you early on about our group called the M Club. And so we have actually a state senator that went, who came from our group, and a couple of really good psychiatrists and psychologists that came from our group. And they all have told me that, you know, they rely on their acting, you know, chops, having learned. A lot of them went on to college and had a minor in acting. And so I wanted to know, Larry, or Leonard, was there a particular, can you talk about it even? Was there a particular case that you were working on where you were like, okay, let me go to my acting chops for this
one? Well, except that it's reversed for me. I never appeared on stage until I moved to Ojai 30 years ago. So I'd been a lawyer for 20 years before I got on stage. So if anything, it's reversed. The lawyer
interesting
helped me as an actor.
That's very interesting. Yeah.
I was yanked out of the chorus in the sixth grade production of The Wizard of Oz because I was furthest off key. And I never made an appearance in a stage till I moved to Ohio. And a friend of mine was doing a play and he told me he had a role for me. So I said, all right, I'll try it.
This is kind of his, I think it is a revenge role because he gets to sing off key in this show and audience loves it. So.
And then Clay, I want you to tell me about Daddy Warbucks, because right now I'm involved in reading about, you know, the book that was written, Empty Mansions, written about the family that inhabited Bellascardo here in Santa Barbara. The Clark family, and one of the three richest families in Belle Epoque, New York, and Huguette Clark, the daughter who passed away, I think in 2008 or 2009. I remember appraising some of the doll collection in Bellascardo, and you're playing Oliver Daddy Warbucks, and you are a retired CFO.
That is correct. And, of course, Warbucks is a fictional character, but one of Gay's original assignments to us was to write our character's background. So I had to invent Warbucks' background. And he grew up, as we know, both his parents died by the time he was 10. He was raised by his uncle, who was high in the police department, and really had sort of a hardscrabble upbringing but was very entrepreneurial and made a lot of money early and just kept going. And so he's sort of a tough nut. I'm sure Lenny has met plenty of New York tough nuts. I worked there for 10 years and I ran into a bunch of them myself. And it's a very exciting place to be. But you can become intoxicated by all that, you know, rough and tumble excitement and business stuff. The arc for Warbucks, of course, is going from that hard-bitten business all day long and all night to a softy who gets to really understand the other side of life, which is family and relationships and so on, which New York really has a lot of. So Warbucks is pretty much of a caricature of an image, I'm enjoying the part, and I actually did it once before. 19 years ago or 20 years ago, something like that. And in college, my fraternity had a singing group that we were part of. And my fraternity was, in fact, the fraternity that was model for the movie Animal House. One of my fraternity brothers.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's amazing. You know,
when I saw that movie, I walked out. I was stunned. I swore I knew half the people in the movie, and then later on, I found out why.
Where did you go to school? What are you saying that your fraternity? Which fraternity? And was it truly modeled?
Yeah, I'll get the book out. Hold on, 10
oh,
seconds.
Wow.
It's called. Let's see if I can find it here. Not showing up right now, but the name of the fraternity in the movie, they're called the Deltas, but they are actually Alpha Delta Phi is the name of the fraternity. And here's a little unknown fact, as long as we're on the subject of fraternities. This is an Alpha Delta Phi roll of all the graduates of Alpha Delta Phi. This book was written, this directory is from 1928. And among others, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was an Alpha Delta from Harvard.
Wow.
Harvard graduate year of 1904. But anyhow, so the guy who wrote the book, he graduates. Alpha Delta Phi was a national fraternity. We had chapters in many different colleges, and the guy who wrote it was a fellow named Chris Miller, and he was from Dartmouth, and I went to college at Stanford, so we were not in the same college, but we were in the same fraternity, and the way fraternities work, you're all brothers, regardless of which school you went to, and the story of how he wrote the story that became the movie he was working for National Lampoon, and he was just a writer in the magazine, and he was getting very tired of the deadline shtick. And so one day he walked in and said, "I'm resigning because I just can't handle these deadlines anymore." Mm. And they liked him as a writer, and they said, "Gee, Chris, you know, we don't want you to leave." He said, "But I have to. I can't stand the deadlines anymore." And they said, "Well, that's tough because we were going to do a movie and we were hoping you could write the script." And
wow.
And it's what he really wanted to do. So he decided to stay, but it was actually not true. They weren't doing a movie. They just wanted to make him stay one way or another. So then they sit down and said, "Okay, what should the movie be about?" And nobody had any ideas. And he said, "Well, I've written a bunch of short stories about what it was like when I was back at Dartmouth at the Alpha Delta fraternity." And so that's how Animal House happened. And
I'll be darned. Funny.
And
you see, but this is my point, Gay, about Ojai. Mm-hmm. There's so many creative people with such backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. We have a little cottage behind our house that is next to our swimming pool, and we let people stay there every once in a while. Right now, we have a woman staying there. She's one of the actresses in a movie that's being filmed in Ojai right now. And she is the daughter of Kevin Bacon, who was in Animal House. That was his first movie role.
That's amazing, Clay.
Yeah. Okay. So anyhow.
Well, what you find out, it's in that fantastic. Just by the way, Clay, now, before we go to quick break, what movie is being made in Ojai right now?
Well, there's a woman named Lee Scher, who's actually married to a fellow who's an attorney. She wrote a movie script, and my wife, Kim, has actually been to watch some filming going on here in town. But to tell you the truth, I don't know the name of the movie, and I don't know anything about it other than I know what the budget is. And Ted Danson's wife is in the movie, and you know, several sort of the local artist types are involved. And that's all I know about that movie.
Oh, that's fantastic. The connections. That's just, what is it, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon? It really, this is, you know, life imitating art. Let's go to quick break. Hey, Richard, are you there? Okay. Richard will take us to a quick break when he gets back. But I wanted to ask anybody who will talk to me, because I'm a dog fanatic. I don't know if you saw my little Dachshund, you know, tearing back.
No, I didn't see him.
Yeah. So I'm a dog lover. I want to know about Sandy. Who can tell me about Sandy?
Well, Lenny's worked a lot with Sandy. I've worked a lot with the dog trainer, who happens to be a psychotherapist. And and Sandy is, Scarlett is a pet therapy trained as well. So she does a lot of going into hospitals and hospices, et cetera, and calming children down, et cetera.
Her real name is Scarlett?
Her real name is Scarlett O'Hacker, because they adopted her from Atlanta. And Lisa, the owner, her last name is O'Hacker. Her partner, Ben, happens to work on set. So when you say there are a lot of talented people, you just never quite know who's building the set for you. I mean, she's a psychotherapist. He's been in construction and owned his own business, et cetera. So people just volunteer, I think, and it's always wonderful to have that. Lenny, you want to talk about working with Scarlett?
Well, what I was going to say was I'm in awe at this dog. Like, doesn't panic. Yeah. People, you know, we have a full house, 130 people applauding at the end, and lots of noise on stage from everybody singing, 30 people, 35 people singing, people applauding. And the dog just sits there and is as calm as could be, doesn't miss a cue, runs right out to Andy when he's supposed to run out to Andy, follows me around when he's supposed to follow me around. It's the easiest cast member to work with. Always doesn't miss anything. I always miss. That's I miss a lot more lines and cues than the
pretty
dog
low
does.
Bar.
The dog. The two girls playing Annie have both learned dog training signals, so they now know how to make Scarlet bark on cue, how to make Scarlet jump on cue. Scarlet jumps out of a big Christmas present at the end, and Annie always has to have a treat ready in her pocket to hand to her. So we've sewn special pockets into Annie's dresses. So the first time that they had the pocket was too low. So Scarlet would try to get underneath the dress to get to the pocket. We thought, well, that's not a good choice. So we made this pocket higher up so that, and the other thing you need to know, Elizabeth, Scarlet is not sandy colored. Scarlet is what I call a party poodle. He's black and white. So Lenny has to play this, oh, yeah, sandy color, kind of sarcastic. And, you know, the audience goes right along with it. So everything is, I think everybody's accepting that this is a story, you know, and it's a playful story, but it's also a heartwarming story. You see Clay's character transition from what I call a kind of a strict, I kept telling him he had to talk to his servants and to Grace Farrell like they are his worst members of the board that never paid attention. And then he has to get really warm when this little girl goes, oh, please. And then he dances with her and there's a line where he says, you wound me around your finger. I mean, it's a transition for Clay. And I can't imagine, Clay, you playing it 19 years younger and you playing it now because you're such a wonderful age. Because you have a line that says, when he's dancing with Annie, not bad for an old man. Clay, I can't imagine 19 years ago you looked like an old man. But anyway.
We cut that last time.
Okay, never mind. Okay. All right. But Scarlet is wonderful. A little dog, like a big dog. But like I said, Lenny practices with her every time coming in because he's supposed to follow him along and then leave her there while he walks off. And his reaction to Scarlet leaving, being Sandy left there. And then Sandy just runs right off.
Well, do you think, Leonard, do you think that the dog Scarlet, a.k.a. Sandy, does that dog know that she's on stage?
Oh,
I don't know what a dog knows. I know that the dog knows what to do when we taught him what he was supposed to do. He knows there are a lot of people. Yeah. And he sort of stares at him, so I guess he might, you know, he might know he's entertaining.
You know, why I ask that is because my dog, Slinks. Slinks is a miniature Dachshund, and Slinks is, you know, a rescue. And so Slinks came to us and was biting ankles. Yeah. And I hired a professional trainer to see if I could stop Slinks from doing, you know, aberrant behavior like this. And the trainer said to me, I have a background. I've trained a number of dogs for Westminster, the famous dog show. And he's done, you know, he's been one of those guys in the flat shoes that run around the track at Westminster with these dogs. And I said, he's raised prize dogs. And I said, do your dogs know that they're at Westminster? Do they know that there's thousands of eyes and TV cameras and da, 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 da? And he said, you know something, Elizabeth? They do know because what they're wired to do, how they're wired to survive thousands and thousands and thousands of years is they pick up on energy. And so they definitely know that they're the focal point at that because they feel all of that energy. And it's a real challenge to make them to make them not gloat at some point because they realize I'm the center of attention here, you know. I was asking
this whole cast, including the dog, is reasonably egoless for a bunch of actors. Everybody, including the dog, is getting along with everybody else.
And I think Scarlet is food oriented, like we all are, so that helps as well.
Yeah. One last question, then we'll go because Richard's got to edit this. And okay. So I want to know what it's like, Gay. How many years, 50, 60, how many years have you worked with young folks?
Oh, my God. Started in 1964. Did I start? 64, yes. And then I've transitioned. I'm working with SAG-AFTRA radio players now on the committee and on the performer for SAG-AFTRA LA committee. So I've kind of transitioned to that. But I've also worked with Stage to Stage, in which we take stage readings of children's books into classrooms. So I'm all over the place. I do workshops for youth. My next show is Seussical Junior, and that will have youth in the summer, and since it's the 50th anniversary of Dr. Seuss, I think it will be appropriate for that. And then, what have I learned? That people love, first of all, they love creativity, that they are hopefully appreciate communication and clear communication. And I know sometimes, particularly in theater, I don't know about other artistic forms, but there's a little bit of rumor mill going on, or she said, he said. I'm going, right now I don't have time for that. Let's get on to what our job is, and that is telling a story for an audience. And that's we're storytellers. We were, I think, descended from the cavemen dancing around the campfire and telling stories with our sticks or whatever. But now we have LED lights, and we're still dancing around and telling stories. So I think that's the main thing. And like Bill said and others, it feeds our creative spirits to do that. And yes, it's time. It's so much time commitment. And people think it's, oh, so easy. You just get up there and do it. No, 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 no. As well, you know, Elizabeth, it takes a lot of time to get everybody ready to go, and a lot of technical behind the scenes work. I have an article that I'm trying to get published on the Ojai Art Center Theater website that features all the number of technical people behind the scenes. And we have a picture of the staff. So it's really cool, I think, because I honor those people as well, because we could not make it on and off without stage managers. And I have students who have come back here at Ojai who started with Ojai with me when they were 4 years old, and now they're in college and they're serving as assistant stage managers because they want to give back. So I think that's what fantastic. It's about.
Yeah. And I want to circle back to the beginning of our interview and ask Gay one final question. How do you recognize talent, Gay?
I'm going to say, you know, when you asked me that question, the one student I thought of, I had a girl that came in as a high school dancer, and she wanted to be in theater, but she was scared of being in theater. She had a lot of eating disorders and a lot of issues, but she got the support that she needed from us. And out of high school, she went to college and studied lighting, and then started working for Disney. Like everybody else in the world, all of us have had our tenure at Disney, I think, at one time or another. But she's now on the book cover called Women in Lighting. And I just think back at that 14-year-old girl that came in needing a place to dance. Then I also think of another kid, a little bit of bragging. If you've seen Wicked or if you've seen the other one, a former student of mine choreographed both shows. And he's working with Lin-Manuel Miranda and In the Heights, et cetera. He started as a basketball kid that would come and wait for his friend in rehearsal. And so we kind of recognized that Chris knew hip hop. So we asked him to do a little hip hop class. And good grief, look where he is now. How do you recognize it? I think you see a spark that maybe other people don't see. I don't know nothing about, I don't, I took solid geometry in high school, but didn't get a lot of sparks in solid geometry. So I think in creative and music and band, whatever it is, dance, wherever we can with the arts, we were really big behind Prop 28 to get funding for theater artists to get into the classrooms. I was on that committee to help fund that and help set that up with and the theater credential. We got a theater credential after 46 years after having it taken away from us, and dance credentials. So I think a lot of people that I know are willing to work behind the scenes because we recognize creativity and collaboration and communication and all those skills that are going to make it better in your real life, in your real world, and in your job. And that's my pitch for the arts, I think.
Definitely wonderfully put. Yeah. And thank you, everybody, for being with us. And you don't have much time. We got till December 21st. Get your tickets for Annie. And then you want to also pay attention. June 12th through July 12th, Seussical, the musical, Junior. That's the next Gay Jones directed show at the Ojai Arts Center Theater. So put that on your calendar as well. And I thank everybody that came today. And it's been so much fun to talk to you all. And also thank you for the reading. That was a blessing. Thank you, Gay. Thank you, all the cast. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for hosting us. It was great.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.